Welcome to this edition of the Vanderbilt University Health and Wellness Wellcast. I'm Glenn Harness with Health and Wellness. I'm here with Dr. Melanie Swift, the Occupational Health Clinic Medical Director. We're talking today about the flu vaccine for H1N1. The new H1N1 flu vaccine is now here. Can you tell me what kind of vaccine it is?
Right now, the vaccine that we have available is the live attenuated form of vaccine, which is a nasal spray. But very soon we will also be receiving the injectable form of the vaccine, more of a traditional shot, and that's an inactivated vaccine.
Last summer we assumed that everyone would need two shots. Is that still true?
No, that is no longer true. That has been a happy surprise. Studies in the Southern Hemisphere indicated that people who got one shot had a very good antibody response that really was not improved upon with a second dose. So that means that for people age 10 and older, you only need one dose of this vaccine, which means our vaccine supply is going to stretch further, which is good news for everyone who would like to get it.
How effective is the vaccine?
Well, every year we look at the effectiveness of flu vaccine, which is only something you can determine after you get into the flu season and see whether people get sick or not. And every year we are dependent upon the three strains in the vaccine to match what's actually circulating and making people sick. And it's a little bit of a gamble. Usually there's at least one of the three strains that's slightly off, but on the whole, it's usually 70 to 90% effective. With H1N1, we actually have a luxury of being able to match this vaccine to that exact strain of virus. So we have a perfect match, and you almost never have that with the flu vaccine. So based upon that, and based upon the fact that the antibody responses in the trials were very good, I think this is going to be an extremely effective vaccine against this strain of influenza.
Do we know how safe the vaccine is?
Well, we know how safe flu vaccine is. And this is really just one more strain of flu vaccine. You know, every year we manufacture new flu vaccine, and it's got three different strains in it, two influenza A strains and one influenza B strain. And if we'd had a crystal ball at the beginning of the manufacturing cycle, then one of those influenza A strains would have been against this H1N1. But nobody knew that that was coming until manufacturing was already underway. So it was sort of too late to stop a moving train. So what was created was just another strain of vaccine using the same factories, the same process, the same quality controls, all done the same way, just to create one more strain of the flu. So it's really a fourth strain of flu vaccine. We know that seasonal flu vaccine is extremely safe. We have no reason to think that this is going to be anything otherwise.
What side effects can happen from the H1N1 vaccine?
Well, again, we're basing this not only on the clinical trials, which really didn't show any significant side effects, but the evidence that we have from our experience with seasonal flu vaccine. And because there's two different forms of vaccine, there's two different sets of side effects. So first of all, let's talk about the shot. That's the inactivated form of vaccine, very innocuous and easy to take. The biggest risk of a side effect there is just from a sore arm where you had the injection. People can have some redness and tenderness at the site of the injection, and their arm could be sore for a couple of days. With the shot, if you look at studies where people get placebo shot versus the real influenza vaccine, there's really no difference in the rate of things like muscle aches or colds or headache or any other symptom. So while people certainly have all those things going on through the flu shot season, it's very likely that none of that's attributable to the shot. Now, the nasal spray vaccine is a little bit different because it's a live attenuated vaccine. And what does that mean? Well, this virus has been treated so that it can live in cool temperatures for a little while, but it cannot survive at body temperature. And so that means it can't really live in the lungs. It can't cause a lung infection or influenza. But because it can live for a little while and that's part of what's used to provoke an immune response. It lives in the nose for a little while. Now, that can cause a low-grade little infection, which is like a cold, a runny nose, nasal congestion, a sore throat, and some muscle aches. Those are the four side effects that adults can have from this vaccine. Most people really don't have any of those. The majority of people have no side effects. In fact, in previous years, we've had people forget that they actually had the flu mist, and later on in the season say, oh, I need to get my flu shot and get a flu shot too, because it was just, you know, so forgettable to have that.
So if you take the live virus vaccine, you may get a runny nose. Mm-hmm. Are you then contagious to anybody else?
Well, that's an excellent question, and a lot of research was put into trying to answer that very question when they introduced this product for the seasonal vaccine. If you take a group of toddlers that are in daycare and you give them the live virus vaccine, and then you go back a week later and find their little friends who've not had the vaccine, and you put a Q-tip in their nose and swab and try to grow that virus, you will find that some of those unvaccinated children will actually have the vaccine strain in their nose. Now, are they sick? No. Do they have fevers? No. They're doing just fine running around at daycare. But that's some evidence that, at least in children, some shedding can occur. It does not appear to be clinically significant, meaning it's fine for kids that have siblings at home to go ahead and get this nasal spray vaccine, even if their sibling can't take the nasal spray vaccine themselves. In adults, there's even less shedding. So really, there's no reason to be concerned about shedding a virus for adults, but we do take some extra precautions in areas where we have a really protected environment for an incredibly vulnerable patient population. So that would be in a bone marrow transplant unit, or we just don't want to risk having a lot of healthcare workers in that environment who might shed this virus and contaminate some surfaces. But other than that, adults should feel very comfortable taking the live virus vaccine and then being around their children, their babies, their family members at home, even if those people themselves are not eligible for the vaccine. While we're on that, you know, the live virus vaccine can't be given to everybody. It's only licensed for healthy people ages 2 to 49. So it's not been tested in people over 50, although there's not much difference between the nose of a 50-year-old and a 49-year-old, but the FDA has licensed it for a specific age bracket. It also has not been tested in pregnant women, so it's not licensed in pregnancy. And because of the concern of causing a cold, there are groups of people for whom getting a cold can have more ramifications. So it's not licensed for use in people who have health conditions such as asthma, heart disease, or if their immune system is weakened.
I've heard a lot about Guillain-Barré syndrome, especially related to the swine flu vaccine in the 70s. Is this a similar vaccine, and is there a concern this may cause the same problems?
Well, the rate of Guillain-Barré is about 1 in 100,000 people per year, and that's an incredibly rare disease. What happened in the 1970s is that when the swine flu was discovered in the 1970s, it's a different swine flu than this year's, but it was discovered in a group of soldiers living in Fort Dix, New Jersey. And there was concern that this could be the start of a new pandemic, and that we could be seeing a strain that was going to cause another devastating pandemic like the 1918 pandemic. So this aroused a lot of concern, and a decision was made to go ahead and create a vaccine before this had become an epidemic. And so anytime you're looking at a risk-benefit ratio, you've got to look at what's the burden of disease and what are the risks of the vaccine. And if the burden of disease is great, then of course it usually outweighs the risk of the vaccine. But if there's no disease, then there's really no benefit to getting a vaccine. Well, what happened in the 1970s is that manufacturers don't stand to make a lot of money on vaccines, especially when they don't know what the epidemic is going to turn out to be like. So the vaccine manufacturers actually requested an indemnification from lawsuits mainly because they just didn't want to lose money on the deal. But this, of course, aroused a lot of concern and suspicion about, oh my gosh, what's wrong with this vaccine? They must know something's wrong with this vaccine. So the safety of that vaccine was really put in the spotlight. Now, the CDC had established a surveillance system for monitoring for any potential side effects of the vaccine. And what was noted that year was that that rate of Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is usually about 1 in 100,000, was higher that year. So as the vaccine program rolled out and the disease never materialized, they decided to halt the vaccine program and look further into the Guillain-Barré thing. And given that there was really no epidemic to fight, there's really no benefit to giving people this vaccine anymore. So what has ensued in the last 30 years is a lot of investigation into whether there is really a relationship between Guillain-Barré and flu vaccine. And there's really no consensus that there is. There have been years where it looks like the rate may be higher. There have been studies that suggest there's absolutely no increased risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome from a flu vaccine. At the most, the risk takes it up to less than 2 per 100,000. So it's still a very rare disease. But apparently Guillain-Barré syndrome, although the causes are not really known, can be triggered by a lot of different things. Viral infections, injections, and other events. Being struck by lightning has been one of the things that can potentially, you know, link to it. So it's an incredibly rare disease. It appears to be mediated by the immune system. Even getting flu shots, there appears to be no increased risk. And even if there is, the total risk is so small that if you're looking at a disease such as H1N1 that we've got now that's actually causing a pandemic and people have died from, then the benefits far outweigh any risk.
Well, great. I really appreciate you talking to me. I think that's going to answer a lot of questions for people.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Please feel free to leave us any comments on this WellCast by clicking the Add New Comment link at the bottom of this page. If you have a story suggestion, please email it to us at health.wellness@vanderbilt.edu, or you can use the Contact Us link on our website at healthandwellness.vanderbilt.edu.